Thank you so much, Julie. It's an absolute privilege to be here, and I really thank you, Julie, for the invitation and the opportunity to be here in Maruya again. I was here at this building last October for a nighttime function, and maybe some of you are here for that. Thank you if you've come back again. You must need to, I don't know, find something else in life. but I do appreciate it. And it was great yesterday. That was amazing to see so many people out on a Saturday afternoon. And it's always a privilege to share about, for me to share about my passion for politics and for this nation. And then this morning, just to perhaps just give a little bit of a word in terms of preaching, but also, I guess, perhaps a theological rationale for why I'm so passionate about this nation and why we as Christians should get involved. So this morning I want to talk about the issue of idolatry and the fact that idols might be things we associate with the Old Testament and with pagan cultures, but I want to submit today that idolatry is well and truly alive in 2024 in modern day Australia. And that it's the job of the people of God to be displacing and destroying idols. You know, when the children of Israel were set free from Egypt, that was a great deliverance from slavery, wasn't it? But you know what? That wasn't the end of the story. Just because, you know, my sins have been washed away or I've been brought out of slavery, that was only just the beginning, wasn't it? And we see in the book of Deuteronomy, In the early part of that, and I'm thinking particularly of chapters, 6, 7, 8, but pretty much that whole first part of Deuteronomy, it's Moses giving a sermon to these people who have come out of Egypt, and they're on the plains of Jordan, on the western side of the Jordan River, and they're all prepared, ready to go in to take this land that they'd been promised as they came out of Egypt 40 years earlier. And the reason they were there 40 years later after being set free from slavery was because there'd been some disobedience in the camp, hadn't there? They decided that after the spies went in, remember Joshua and Caleb, they came back and said, look, this is a great land. We can go up and take it. This is what God's given us. So they were full of faith. And the other 10 spies said, well, no, there's these giants there and it's all too hard and we're like grasshoppers. And they put fear in the hearts of the people. And, of course, people rebelled. And so they ended up, for their rebellion, spending another 40 years in the wilderness. God was angry with them because they didn't have the faith to go in and do what he told them to do and said that he would be with them and he would help them defeat the giants, but they thought, no, it's all too hard. And so they spent 40 years, and here they are, fast forward 40 years, that old generation had all died out except for Caleb. He was still alive. How old was Caleb? Does anyone remember? Exactly. He was in his 80s. Anyone in their 80s here today? Excellent. The youth group. Fantastic. Well, Caleb wasn't, and because he'd been faithful, God said, you're the only one, you and Joshua are the only ones of that generation that are going to go in and possess this land. So Caleb was there with them, and there's Moses giving this speech, and Moses wasn't even going to go in because he'd actually got angry and struck the rock when God said, speak to the rock. Remember that? So a little bit of a biblical survey here to paint the picture of where they are and why destroying idols is so important. So Moses is there. And he's giving his last sermon to them before they go in to take possession of this amazing land, to get out of the wilderness and to go in and meet their destiny. And I want to read just a few verses from Deuteronomy chapter 7. Just bear with me because the Bible's really important, but it's easy to tune out when people read Scripture, isn't it? So tune in. Here we go. Deuteronomy 7 verse 1. When the Lord your God brings you into the land, this is Moses preaching to the people, into the land that you are entering to take possession of it, and clears away many nations before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, sounds like a swarm of wasps or something, doesn't it? The Jebusites, seven nations more numerous and mightier than you. And when the Lord your God gives them over to you and you defeat them, then you must devote them to complete destruction. Sounds a bit harsh, doesn't it? You shall make no covenant with them, and show no mercy to them. You shall not intermarry with them, giving your daughters to their sons or taking their daughters for your sons. For they would turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods, to serve idols. Then the anger of the Lord would be kindled against you, and he would destroy you quickly. But thus you shall deal with them. You shall break down their altars and dash in pieces their pillars and chop down the Asherim and burn the carved images with fire. For you are a people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for his treasured possession out of the peoples who are on the face of the earth. So that's a long slab of scripture there. But I want to focus in on verse 5 here. It says, you shall deal with them, you shall break down their altars and dash their pieces, their pillars, and chop down their Asherim and burn their carved images with fire. The Asherim was a female version of the god Baal. Remember, Baal gets a lot of airplay in the Old Testament, but there's Asherim. Asherim was also known as Ashtaroth. There was also the god Molech, the god of the Amorites. And you think about this, why is God so picky about whether people bow down to images of wood and carved things? Why is God so picky? I don't think it's actually the carved images that's the big problem. It's what went behind the carved images. Now, if you look at, do a study of what these gods were and what the worship of them required, you realize why God was so upset about this idea of idolatry and why he wanted idolatry destroyed. Baal and Ashtaroth was basically a sex cult. It was a fertility cult. They, the Baal temple worship involved sexual rituals, temple prostitutes. They thought that by engaging in these sort of lewd acts that they could affect the fertility of the land, that it would bring them good harvest. They thought it could affect whether it rained or not. Now, just think about, fast forward to 2024, and the sort of religious fervor with which we try and sacrifice to the climate gods to try and, cool our planet. It's almost a religious ritual. Now, that's a political statement right there. But going back, they were just as superstitious, 3,000 years ago, with their worship of Baal and Ashtaroth. But also, so that was bad enough in itself that it was this bizarre sex cult to try and affect the fertility of the land and whether it would rain or not. This was the superstition that was tied up with Baal worship. But more than that, it also involved child sacrifice and human sacrifice. This was an extremely wicked, wicked thing. So you've got weird sex stuff going on as part of their religion, and you've got the evil of child sacrifice going on. So all in the name of, they thought that these rituals could bring them better prosperity, could bring materialism, good harvest, meant, good things. It meant that they could have stuff that they needed to be wealthy. There was the hedonistic pleasure that went with it. And of course, there was the child sacrifice. So you think, well, these people are pagans, they're unenlightened, they don't know anything, and that's all that stuff in the past. Well, I'm not so sure that we're any more enlightened than them. Let's have a bit of a think about where we are. I've already mentioned what we do to try and placate the climate gods. We think if we, cruel our economy that somehow and shut down coal-fired power stations, that somehow we can affect the temperature of the planet. There's a religious fervour that goes with the whole environmental movement. This is not my words. Look at Bob Brown, the founder of the Australian Greens political party. He talks about this mythical thing called Gaia. He's a pantheist. He believes that the earth is some sort of spiritual thing that needs to be placated and worshipped and venerated, and that's very much behind the green political movement. There's a religious thing behind it. It's called Gaia. Look it up. This is not me. These are people who have a spiritual dimension. Think about other aspects of our society. What have we done, particularly in the last 50 years or so? Nothing's new under the sun, but in the last 50 years or so, we've let the floodgates open in terms of a thing called the sexual revolution. It happened just as I was being born in the 1960s, and it's just we've reaped a whirlwind for it. Now our children are socialised into pornography through their smartphones, at age 10 and younger. And it's having a devastating impact on the way, particularly young boys. It affects girls as well, but it affects girls particularly because of the way it affects boys, and it creates expectations and thoughts in their minds about how they should treat women. And so we've got a massive problem in our society, have had for a number of decades, getting worse because young boys have this entitlement mentality, and they have this distorted view of women. They don't know how to be gentlemen anymore. We've got misplaced sexuality. And we essentially live in a modern-day sex cult as a result of just throwing off all restraint. Now, you know, there's always been immorality, of course. It's not just new to our generation, but it's been turbocharged in our generation because of Hollywood, because of the internet, because of junking the idea of traditional morality. That's a dirty phrase now. If you go out in public and talk about morality, no one wants to hear it. Last Sunday morning, actually, I wasn't in church. I was at Sky News Studios in Artarmon, having a debate for a program that they have called The Jury. And I was debating this woman who writes dating columns for news.com. She's a lady in her mid-30s, unmarried, quite attractive and quite savvy with youth culture and the like. And here I am, a middle-aged man in my 50s, who've been married for 30 years. And I'm debating this topic of, is marriage an outdated institution? And I was asked to defend the idea that marriage is not an outdated institution, and you've got this quite attractive woman who's a dating columnist for news.com saying that it is outdated. And so I made the case, look, marriage is good for the couples because we commit that we're not going to cheat on each other. That's good for the couples, that's good for children, stability, you know, all these things which we know children need, which are benefits that flow from marriage and then affect the wider society. So I gave my little spiel, and then she comes on and says, oh, I've never heard something so crazy. That's all like a time walk back to the 1950s, you know. That's her argument. And this is the sort of shallowness of the debate today, because we live in this society which has junked the idea of morality, junked the idea of marriage. But, you know, the funny thing is, most people want it anyway. And so when they threw it to the jury of 12 people who are in the studio with us, I won 10-2. I couldn't believe it. So, and this is despite 50 years of the culture telling us all that marriage is outdated. You know what? There's something deep in the hearts of people that know the truth. They know the truth. Everyone wants, even if we don't always live up to the ideal, and we all make mistakes, of course, and even though I've had the privilege of being married for 31 years, my wife would say that she's never considered divorce, but often murder. So none of us are perfect. But and many of us, you know, I don't want to sort of paint an ideal thing, but we should aspire to the ideal. And so there's something deep in all of our hearts that wants that. And if a studio audience at Sky News is any indication of that, it's still there. So we live in a day where, yeah, we have a modern day sort of climate religion. We have a sex cult thing going on. We certainly worship money and materialism. We have idols that are still with us today. And Moses was saying to the people of Israel, your job is to go into this land and, I'm judging these people. It all sounds very harsh and there's no mercy or whatever. And I don't quite know how to explain the ethics of all of that. That's probably a sermon for another day. But the point is, God wanted these idols destroyed because they didn't actually bring what the people wanted to. There's nothing good about a cult that involves sacrificing little children. That's the other thing that I should have mentioned. We have child sacrifice today too. It's not just those pagans 3,000 years ago. Everyone thinks, well, you know, we would never, you know, hold a ritual in the dark and have this big statue and put a child on it and let it fall into a fire as part of some religious festival. Well, that doesn't happen today. No, we're just a little bit more sophisticated about it. It happens in hospitals. And you know why it happens? It happens because, not because we think of women's choice. It happens because we're not supporting women, unfortunately. That's the truth of it. It happens because society wants to keep open male sexual freedom and giving men the ability not to take responsibility. That's why abortion and child sacrifice essentially happens in our nation. Now, I need to be careful with it because I know that this is an issue that might have touched people in this room. I'm not trying to be judgmental of anyone who has found themselves with an unsupported pregnancy or knows someone in that situation. But I'm just saying our society and our culture has allowed this to happen, and it's a great injustice. It's an injustice to mothers, and of course it's an injustice to the many hundreds of thousands or millions of lives that have been taken in the last 50 years since we've had liberal abortion. And of course in recent years our parliaments have codified what's already been happening in practice by actually changing the law just to make it completely legal. So we have a fertility cult, we have a climate thing, we have worship of materialism, we have child sacrifice, we have idols today. And Moses was there saying, your job is to go in and dispossess these things. My deep concern, and this is part of what drives me in the political realm, is that I think as Christians, we're very, very good at recognising that Jesus has forgiven us of our sins, of course, and we must displace the idols in our own heart. Absolutely. It starts with us bowing the knee to Jesus and forsaking the things of this world. And, you know, it's a lifelong battle to be sanctified. It's a process. Yes, we get free when we meet Jesus, and we took communion today and we sang about being washed white as snow. Thank God for that. You know, my heart needs to be washed white as snow, and I'm thankful for that. And we remember that as we take communion. His blood has been shed for us, and we're on a lifelong journey as individuals to drive the idols out of our own heart, of pride, of lust, of materialism. All these things are things that can be in our heart, but it doesn't just stop there. God loved the world, and he wants these idols driven out of the world as well, because they create injustice and misery. And losing my glasses. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 9, it says this, and this gives us a glimpse, I guess, of what Jesus' heart is for this world. The disciples are saying to him, you know, how should we pray? What do you want us to pray for? What is all this about? And this is when Jesus gives his disciples what we now know as the Lord's Prayer, great prayer. But verse 9, it says, Jesus is saying, pray then like this. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Now, I want to focus on those words, on earth as it is in heaven. You know, I think the real danger for many of us, and I think this is my criticism, I guess, of modern Christendom, or perhaps Christendom of the last 200 years or so, to be really honest, where we've reverted into a more pietistic approach to Christianity, is that we've forgotten that what Jesus has done for us is for this world. You know, God so loved the world that he gave. It's not just God so loved you so he could take you to heaven. No, God loved this world that he gave his only begotten Son. And when he teaches his disciples to pray, he doesn't just pray, you know, your will be done in heaven as it's done in heaven. You know, no, your will be done on earth as it's done in heaven. Jesus is interested in this earth, in this world. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. God owns everything. Yes, he's concerned about your soul. Yes, when you die, you will be absent from the body, present with the Lord. There's a great hope in heaven. But the ultimate hope, of course, is the resurrection of this body from the dead. And that's a great mystery. But Jesus was the first to rise from the dead. He's gone before us. All of us are going to rise like that as well. Our bodies will be resurrected in the same way Jesus' body was resurrected. Do you know that? That's our hope. And I loved what our sister earlier prophesied, prayed from Psalm 27, that our hope is to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. God is interested in the land of the living. He's not just interested in you going to heaven to be a disembodied spirit up there. Again, that is not your eternal destiny. Your eternal destiny is as a resurrected being. So when Jesus is talking to his disciples, he's saying, don't focus on heaven. God's up in heaven for sure, wherever heaven is, if heaven's up, or if it's all around us at some other dimension, who knows. But what he's saying is, I want you to be interested in this earth. When you pray that my will, that the Father's will, is done on earth as it is in heaven. Now, the things I've just been describing to you that are the result of idol worship, have been for thousands of years, still are today, that's not heaven on earth. That's not heaven on earth. It's hell on earth. When we sacrifice our economy to try and placate the climate and Gaia, that's bringing pain to people. You know, one of the key things that causes marriages and families to break up, pornography and sex and all that sort of stuff, misappropriated, is bad. But you know what is probably the biggest thing that causes a family to break down? It's financial pressure. It's financial pressure. What's going on in the western suburbs of Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane at the moment, where people can hardly afford to pay their electricity bills, the cost of living is going up? It's because we are sacrificing to this climate cult. Is that God's will on earth? Is it? He's given us an abundant world with lots of resources and amazing abilities to work in technology. Now, if carbon dioxide is ever found to be really something that's boiling the planet, I'm not convinced it is. That's a controversial statement. But if it is, okay, well, let's find a technology. But we don't need to cruel our economy to get there. And we know that this is a nonsense because those who are promoting it won't let us do nuclear power. That's bringing hell and pain on earth. And it's not just in the western suburbs of our major cities. It means that you can't have proper electricity for people in poor countries in Africa. And I know you guys have got mission activities in Africa and Philippines. It's an injustice to those people. Why can't they have the things that we enjoy here in the West and proper electricity? This is bringing hell on earth. Of course, what's happening to the abuse of women as a result of our own modern sex cult is bringing hell to women. Look at what the Me Too movement has done in the last few years. The good aspect of the Me Too movement is it's called out this bad behaviour. It's called out men trying to live Hugh Hefner's dream, the evil man, and unfortunately we can't join the dots. What's happening with the transgender thing is bringing hell on earth for young people. You've only got to look at the growing detransitioner movement, young women in particular, who have brought into this lie, thought they were in the wrong body, had their breasts cut off, and now regret it. There's a woman who was on social media this week by the name of Daisy Strongen. You can look her up. Strongen is her name. And she posted just in the last couple of weeks on social media a photo of her with her newborn baby and her in tears because she can't breastfeed her baby because she went through a period when she thought she was a boy, had surgery and now can't breastfeed her lovely little baby. That's hell on earth as a result of an ideology which deceives and tells young people that you can be whoever you want and that if you think you're born in the wrong body, this is a wicked, wicked thing. And, of course, just this week we've seen revelations again through various reporting that shows the Royal Melbourne Children's Hospital is referring even 15-year-olds for surgery to have double mastectomy so that they can... This is happening in Australia now, folks. This is hell on earth. And, of course, our politicians are turning a blind eye to it. But Jesus came... to encourage us to pray that heaven be brought on earth. He also came, as we hear in Luke 4, verse 18, when Jesus announces his public ministry, remember he goes to the synagogue in Capernaum and he pulls out the book of Isaiah and he reads a quote, and this is what it says. It says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives, and recovery of sight to the blind, and to set at liberty those who are oppressed." We have a world that because of our modern-day idolatry, there is oppression. There's oppression on the poor. There's people are living in captivity all around us. Despite the lovely, affluent society that we live here in Australia, behind many of the doors and many of our communities, maybe even many of our own lives here, there's points of pain and there's suffering, there's oppression. And you can trace all of it back to some form of idolatry and idol worship. But Jesus has come to set people free. And he talks about liberty. He's referring to the Jews' practice that they get through their law of every 50 years, cancelling all the debts, setting people free. You know, Jesus is interested in seeing freedom come on earth. And I believe it's our role as Christians to be bringers of that freedom and that liberty, to see God's will done on earth as it is in heaven. Not just to enjoy our personal salvation with our hope being to go to heaven. No, our hope is that we see this earth transformed. And this is why As a Christian and as someone who feels a real burden for our nation, I feel that we have a role and a responsibility to this nation. Now, there's many areas where we can get involved in. Hell comes into the business community because of corruption and lies and deceit and ripping people off. As Christians, if you're called in the business arena, bring heaven to the business arena, bring justice, bring fair prices, looking after your workers, all of those sort of things. That's bringing heaven. My particular passion is in the political realm, and what I see over and over again is politicians opening the gate for evil. Politics is, it's not everything, it's not the salvation of Australia, but it is very, very strategic. And as Christians, we should have something to say to that area. And when you've got politicians that are allowing laws, that allow child gender clinics to exist, that allow abortion to be something, that allow pornography, that have taxation policies that make it hard for families, that force both parents to go out and work just so that you can basically make a living, and where housing is unaffordable, this is not heaven on earth, this is hell on earth, and our politics has a big part to play in this. There are other factors, there's culture, there's lots of different things, but if we're talking about politics this morning, this is one area which does need our attention as Christians, and it should have our attention because we are interested in seeing heaven come to earth, and where there's evil being done, where there's foolishness that's happening because of ignorance or because of a lack of courage, then that's where we should get involved in. And I'm very, very passionate about this because we have just as much idolatry. You know, our job as Christians, I believe, is to speak up courageously into these areas. The reason why so much of what I'm talking about today exists is because there's been silence in the church, there's been fear. It's like those 10 spies, when they were initially supposed to go into the land, they said, it's too hard, the Goliaths are too hard. I don't want to be cancelled on social media. I don't want to be... I don't want to be embarrassed or whatever, or it's too hard. The LGBTIQA plus political movement is too hard to take on. I don't want to speak out against that. I don't want to speak against abortion because I might offend people. All of this sort of thing. These are the giants. But, we read the story of David and Goliath and we cheer on David, but are we willing to confront the Goliaths in our day-to-day? And that's the challenge that we have. In my little world of politics, I could have easily gone and pastored a church, and please don't hear me wrong, I really believe in the local church, and I honour Julie, and I honour the pastors in our nation. We desperately need good, strong churches, and it's such a privilege to be here working with you. I could have gone down that track. My dad was a pastor, has a great church in Toowoomba, Queensland, where I grew up, but for some reason God put in my heart a burden for this nation and to be involved in the political realm. And so I've spent 10 years at Australian Christian Lobby, I've spent years working in minor party politics, a lot of that has been some wilderness years, but for whatever reason God's allowed us to stay in the space. And I think one way of helping confront the idols, again, what I'm doing is not everything, but it's something. I think if we can raise a movement of people who are bold and courageous and willing to confront the giants in the political realm, I think maybe that can be part of how we can bring a bit of heaven to Australia where hell is coming through our politics. And so we've started we've rebooted the Family First political party in the last couple of years. A group of really terrific people out of South Australia got it going. I started with them almost 2 years ago. And we're working to try and get a movement raised up. We've been using digital marketing. That's great. It's great to get people on an email list, and there's about 30,000 people involved at that level. There's about 8,000 members of the party, a couple of thousand donors. This is the basis of a movement that's starting to swell. We're running in elections wherever we can. We're madly trying to get registered so we can run in jurisdictions, in states, and the federal election. It's a lot of work. But I just believe that this is part of meeting the challenge. If we want to take on the sex cult, the environment cult, the child sacrifice cult, much of this is being driven by our politics. And I think if we can raise up people and strong and bold parliamentarians who are willing to stand in our parliaments and say, no, there's a better way. We've got a better vision for marriage and family. We know that people want it. I had a little taste of that on the jury last week on Sky. I think if people can hear the truth, but at the moment, the truth, of course, is being suppressed by media that wants to cancel us, that doesn't want the truth to be brought out. Our academic institutions, our cultural institutions, our politics have been taken over by cultural Marxism and an alternative vision for our society. But I think the way forward is certainly circling back to the timeless truths of the past and representing them to a society and to a younger generation who I know deep down want the truth. Because you know why? And this is why I'm an optimist about this, because I believe God has created every human being in his image, and each of us, whether we know Jesus or not, we have a resonance with the truth. I really, really believe this. And if the truth is able to be promoted in the political realm, in the media realm, I think that will touch the hearts of people because deep down it resonates with them. We have a society that's full of lies at the moment. We have a media that tells lies. We have university academics that tell us lies. We have politicians that tell us lies. It's time to start a pushback and a political movement that tells the truth, because I think if people can hear the truth, they will resonate. Now, there'll always be some who'll rebel, of course. There will always be wicked people who will rebel. But I think a great majority of people, they want to know what a good marriage looks like. They want to be able to raise children in a safe and secure environment. They want an affordable house. They want a community that they can be a part of. They want to be part of a nation that they can be proud of, that isn't continually undermined and rubbished as illegitimate all the time. And these are the sort of things that we can show. We can tell a better story for our nation. Do you know why? Because Jesus has given us a better story, because he died on the cross, not just to set us free, but to set this world free, to loose this world from the bonds of idolatry, slavery, and oppression, to proclaim a favourable year of the Lord so that people can have the hope of seeing the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. We have a job to do as Christians. We have land to take. We have idols to dispossess. And I think we've held ourselves back from the political realm because we've thought the giants are too big, that politics is somewhere that Christians shouldn't go. That's land we shouldn't take or try and dispossess. How dare we think like this? I mean, what did God say of the spies who said, we can't go up and take this land? God took a dim view of that, and there was consequences for that. There's nowhere, whether it's politics, whether it's culture, whether it's business, whether it's music, whether it's entertainment, whether it's anywhere that influences people, that we can't go in and dispossess those giants that control those areas of our society. And politics is just one part of that. Our job is to dispossess. Our job is to bring heaven to earth. Heaven to earth. Our job is not to get to heaven. You know, your job is not to get to heaven. Now, you'll go there because you love Jesus and because he saved you, and that's wonderful. And of course, that's a great hope. I'm looking forward to being with Jesus when I die. I'm also looking forward to being resurrected from the dead, and whatever that means and what that life eternal looks like. That's a mystery. We've got some glimpses of it. But in the meantime, our job is to help and be faithful to the mission that God has given his people. Right back from the Jews, when they were told to go and dispossess nations and smash down idols, cut down their idols, cut down their Asherah poles, cut down the things that represent child sacrifice, that represent a sexual ethic that is against human flourishing, cut down the nature worship, and reinstate something which is good for people, which is good for children, which is actually good for the planet. That's the good news of the gospel of Jesus. It's not just the good news for your personal salvation. That's why I believe that politics is really, really important, along with so many other issues. And I'm so grateful to the support of this church and so many others around the nation where people get this revelation. We've got a lot of education to do, but we're very much on the journey, and I'm thankful to all of you. And please don't, you know, the Bible says don't despise the youth if you're young. But, you know, equally, we should absolutely not despise the fact that we're old. We're not done till we're dead. And I know we're a bit of an older crowd here, and I include myself. I'm on the other side of 50, But I'm thankful for the older people that are getting behind the Family First movement. It is an older crowd at the moment, but hey, we're just getting going. You're helping launch us, and I've got no doubt that younger people will be attracted to our mission and vision. And I know this because when we do have events and you have younger people there, they often come up to me and they are energized by it. We'll get there. We'll get there. We've got to start somewhere. And if Caleb could say, give me this mountain at 85, and he went up there, he said, oh, I'm still just as strong, you know. The Bible talks about renewing your strength, like the eagle, run and not be weary. He pours out his spirit on the young and the old. You know, you're not done till you're dead. And I just appreciate all of you, and I appreciated the prayers earlier in the prayer time, and the godliness here, the presence of God here. You are here. This is not a holding pen till you go to heaven. You've got a job here as part of what God's doing in this nation, right here, right now, because of the hope of the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. And so God bless you. It's just a privilege to share with you, and I hope that inspires you. I hope you'll join our revolution against the elites, and will help us dispossess some of the idols and the giants that are in our land. Thank you, and God bless you.